we're talking about someone with millions of dollars behind closed doors paying to do damage to family members, and knowing that family members are suffering at times. And if racism was ever an issue for her, why didn't she go to a black sorority? Why didn't she ever date a black man? I mean, these are all valid questions. I'm gonna keep my family away so that this person doesn't hear all my story. And Harry has the nerve to say that he never got to ride bicycles with his father, or that there wasn't a lot of love, that he didn't get to hug him. Baloney. We've all seen so many pictures of that. What is he talking about? It was meant to hurt people. It was meant to create a smokescreen from reality.
Yes, yes, yes. We're back with another episode on DMC Daily. Today's been a crazy one. We've been recording a lot of videos. It's about 9 o'clock right now. It's dark outside. I haven't even eaten, but I've been looking forward to this one. This episode has been long overdue. We've been trying to sort it out over the last week or so, but it's good to have it done finally. Better late than never. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Very cool. Hey, everyone. It's Samantha Markle, and I thank you so much for having me.
No, anytime. Okay. It's good to get you on, you know. Very interesting. I've seen you've done some interviews recently. I haven't watched them because, obviously, I want to speak to you personally rather than to hear it through other people's mouths and, you know, other edits and stuff.
Got it. Very well.
Definitely. So how was life for you growing up in America?
You know, it was fine. It was normal. It was fun. We grew up with television as a backdrop, which was creative. And, you know, being a studio kid, you are exposed to so many creative people. We pretty much hung out in the art departments. My father worked on a show called Soundstage in Chicago when I was a kid. So we met all of the musicians during the 70s, you know, no matter who they were. It seemed like we met them all and just sort of hung out as studio rats, hanging out under the stage or in the side wings. And that's a really not only creative way to grow up, but it's very humbling because you see at the end of the day that people are just people. You don't look at the celebrity aspect because you're not really aware of what that is. But you look at how nice people are. You look at their lives and their similarities. And you really do see that no matter what the profession, we are all people at the end of the day. So they're more relatable that way, I think. And
100%. That sounds like a good experience.
It was. It was. I think we all grew up to be more creative because of that, but also more well-grounded in what's important in life and how thematically as people, no matter how rich you are or what your status is, that we all live similar lives, similar concerns. We love, we die, we worry about family members, you know, I think you learn to put the emphasis on the right syllable, so to speak, when you're exposed to people from all walks of life.
100%. I think it adds some humanity to life. You know, there's some people that have never seen different people outside of their own bubble. So it's definitely good to know that, you know, you grew up with people from all different walks of life.
And we lived in Los Angeles later after I was 12. But as a small child, we lived in Chicago on both sides of the tracks. So, you know, when my father started, we didn't have a lot of money. And that's a great experience because some of the most amazing, lovely people I've met in the world don't have a dime, but if they did, they would give it to you. You know, and you understand the value of friendships and family when you do live on both sides of the tracks and you see people from all walks of life. Absolutely.
Would you say when you was in Los Angeles then, that was like a big change in your life in terms of like the people you was around, where you kind of viewed life and your experiences?
Not really. I mean, it's glamorous from the outside, but when you grow up there and you grow up in the industry, again, you see that people are just people. And I don't care, you know, who thinks that celebrities have it made in the shade or an easy life. Most of them started with very little. Most of them worked to get everything that they have and faced rejection and faced a lot of challenges in their life, much like everybody else. So that being said, it it was only surreal in that there's so much money floating around. But if you're educated enough and you're street smart enough to see below the glitz and glamour on the surface, you know that those people have worked very hard and they're just people. And, you know, so it if anything, it reinforced not taking things for granted. And I could share some of those observations with other people who are maybe sensationalized by what they see in the big box in their living room. But I think most celebrities can attest to the fact that life is life no matter who you are. And life is precious.
Yeah, I guess there's an illusion for people that aren't, you know, maybe around certain things. They look at it from the outside and think, you know, everything's glamorous and they don't have the same issues. Well, they don't necessarily, but they still have issues. You know, it's just maybe different issues. But everyone's still human. We all still live life and we all go through things. So,
well, yeah. Exactly. And I mean, if they didn't, the depression, substance abuse, and even suicide rates wouldn't be existing or sometimes prevalent among celebrities. You know, I mean, I think that really speaks to the humanness and the fact that money doesn't fix everything. And though people on the outside think it's a cakewalk, my God, it's really not. So we just make the best, you know, everybody, I think, no matter who you are, you make the best of each day, be appreciative and love those around you for the time that we have.
100%. It's important. It's very important. Growing up, who did you grow up with? Did you grow up with two parents in the household? How much siblings did you have? How was it like growing up?
Well, when I was younger, Megan and I have a different mother. So I grew up until I was 12 in Chicago. My parents divorced. And when I moved to Southern California, my father and I had a small apartment in Santa Monica. My brother later joined us. And my father met Megan's mother, and then she moved in with us. The house got to be a little bit too small for all of us. So we got a house in Woodland Hills, California, in the Valley, upper middle class household and community. And then Megan was born a while later. So it seemed pretty normal. We just felt like we were older siblings, cool, a new baby in the house, a new family, a new blended family. And it was wonderful. It was exciting and pretty normal in Southern California. I don't know how to do other than that. Yeah, it was great. And of course, my father and Doria divorced when Meg was six. So all of that time in between, you know, you have the baby learning to walk, throwing food all over the kitchen floor, going to the dog pond, doing normal things with family. And that included my brother and I. And even when they divorced, they had two households. My dad and Doria were emphatic at the very beginning about the fact that Megan should have two households, one bridge. So what that meant was, in the very beginning, when she was still small, she would split time between two parents and just know that everybody loved her. And my brother and I were still there. So we would spend time at dad's house, spend time at Doria's house, go do things on the weekend. And even though we had our own apartments, Meg was in school. So she was going to school, but we had jobs. But that didn't make us any less family because we were always 10, 15 minutes away. So as most people can attest who have younger brothers or sisters, when you work a job and you have a life, you still get together, you're still family, but you have things that keep you busy during the day. No big deal.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it sounds quite, like a nice, like an ideal. I mean, obviously, apart from the fact of the divorce, the fact that everyone was still able to show that love and not let it, you know, destroy everything, which is usually what happens, if we're being honest. Once a divorce happens, you know, the child stays with one side of the family, maybe doesn't even see the other side. It can get quite technical. So,
well, yeah. And there was a time, though, then when Meg was in junior high and I was living in the flat below her and dad, that dad became her primary parent for years, for several years. And he wore a lot of hats. So he not only was, you know, the wearer of all hats and the financial provider of everything, but he was hands-on. He built the stages she danced on and the theaters she performed in. He paid for everything. He was, you know, he was the consummate dad. And anybody who has read her TIG blog or who watched her speech at the UN could see. She said, the world needs more men like my dad. And in the TIG, it was dad. When people tried to force her into an identity and force her to check a box with regards to skin color or race, dad said, no, you define who you are. If there's not a box that you're comfortable putting that check mark in, you draw your own box. You draw the one that says biracial. You define yourself. You don't let others define you. And so, and he took Barbie dolls and he switched the heads on them so they were half black and half white so that the family could be mixed. Instead of a child thinking, wow, I'm gridlocked into, you know, having the family that Mattel says I should have. What about, yeah, so it was really cool of my dad to allow her to define herself. Yeah.
It's crazy, you know, because for me, obviously for what most of us know, especially over here and just people in general, you're actually living this, right? But for us, there seems to be a huge, like, disconnect with her and you guys, like, as a family. So, like, you're pretty cool with your dad, right? Like, you got a good relationship with him.
Well, and so did she always, and that didn't change until seemingly, you know, she wanted to seal off the hatches at the royal wedding because, as you know, when people go to a wedding, they start drinking champagne and everybody starts talking. They start talking about school and the memories and the picnics, and the truth would come out. So the Raglans didn't get invited to the wedding either. Neither did Uncle Mike, who worked for the embassy, because then the truth would come out that she never worked for the embassy and that she only got a 5-week internship study program that dad paid for. So if people talk and people go to the wedding and they talk, then any lies that were spewed in advance of the wedding would be revealed. So it seems like the reflex was to go seal off the hatches and make sure that nobody was there so that nobody could talk. And that's really
sad. Yeah, because my mom said to me that apparently in Harry's new book it says that they paid for a ticket for your dad to come down.
No, that's an absolute lie. No, you know, they you mean to the wedding? No, because he had had a heart attack. They said that they sent a car for him, but it was after the fact when he was already in the hospital, and the whole paparazzi scandal never really happened. It was set up. There was, we were promised that, and I didn't get any payola money, by the way, but this paparazzi contacted me trying to reach dad because they didn't know how to get a hold of him to quote, put him in his proper light. They said, well, there are all these horrible pictures of you out there. Let's take photographs of you and let the world see you as you are. But we didn't know that they took those horrible photographs and it was set up so that he would have no choice but to do a photo shoot to be seen in his proper light, which was entirely unfair. So that being said, we were promised that this guy would be 100 yards down and hiding in the bushes. And then the next day you see him on camera at the internet cafe, walking with a long lens right beside my dad. Well, how is that discreet? How is that down the block and hiding? So it wasn't discreet. And the photographer chose the cafe. After my father said, I know of a great place we could go, the photographer said, no, let's go here. We're going here. So he knew, I believe, that surveillance camera was on the ceiling. He set it up because the very next day there was this big article, photo scandal, Thomas Markle, you know, big scammer, and it was set up to discredit him. And furthermore, on his Facebook page the next day, he was bragging about it, calling it a, quote, cheeky little hit. So he was proud of it, and the Daily Beast did an article and said this is what they do. They're notorious for this. They set people up, they take photographs that make you look shoddy, and then they come to you as if they're going to be a hero and give you an opportunity to look better so that they can then promote that it was a scandal and it was a scam. So I believe it was all set up. It was pretty terrible, and it was an excuse to keep dad away so he couldn't talk. Yeah, it is crazy. It's really sad, especially since even up to the, you know, the phone call, Daddy, I met a prince. You know, it's like daddy was everything until you want to keep him quiet. And until...
How is your dad right now?
He's okay. He's doing better. Tom is there helping him out. It's clear across the country for me, but he's struggled with his speech, and getting over a stroke is really hard, but he's doing a lot better. And I'm really, God, I feel blessed that he's alive and that he's doing so well under the circumstances. And, you know, but still, that doesn't make it easier. He doesn't have closure. It's like his heart has been ripped out. Having two heart attacks through a pandemic and now a stroke and being ignored. But more than that, finding out that PR were being paid behind closed doors to do this damage and to hurt us and to discredit us. So there's so much water on the bridge, but it was, in my opinion, so fundamentally evil that there are no words. And how does a parent accept that when you give your child everything, your blood, sweat, and tears, and opportunities that most kids around the world don't get? You pay for their education, you expose them to opportunities that lead her to where she is today. And to be just so not wholly disregarded, but attacked and lied about in an effort to cover up one's own lie. It's incredibly hurtful. And I know most parents out there would be going, oh my God, if my child did that, what do you do? How do you ever recover from that?
Yeah, especially on a global stage, really, because for the whole world to see, right?
Yeah. And, you know, she could have taken the opportunity, instead of her lies in the Fiji speech, was saying that she got grants and scholarships, which she never did. Dad paid for everything. She should have taken that opportunity to pay homage and give accolades to the parents around the world who save and struggle to give their kids an education. To say, you know what, parents deserve some recognition here. We thank our parents around the world for making us who we are, for believing in us, for building us, because without them, we would be nothing. Like, why didn't she give that speech instead of lying and engaging in self-glorification? It was so incredibly selfish. It was such a lie. And, you know, shame on her for not giving appreciation to parents worldwide. Parents live for this.
Yeah.
You know,
would you say, is this something, you know, you grew up with her, is this something you would say is like out of character? Is this like something that you would, you know, suspect? Like, how do you look at, I don't know, obviously I don't know her from growing up. So, well, you know, there's some characteristics that some people show. Is this something?
You know? I would never say don't love and spoil your children, because you can't foresee that they're going to go left field and take everything for granted. So I don't think my dad, he's been accused of spoiling her too much. I don't think he would have known or could foresee that anything like this would ever happen. And I don't think, you know, I don't think he ever wanted anything back from her. So he didn't ask for gratitude as a standard ritual, so to speak, after she was given things. But I think he assumed, perhaps wrongly, that she appreciated it and that she would make good decisions in her life. And certainly, although he didn't want reciprocation, I think he did want love and appreciation and some gratitude in return, which is not a lot to ask for a parent. I don't think there were early indicators of that anybody noticed. And you love your kids. You don't, you know, stop and question or analyze how they're processing what you do for them. You just do it with nothing, you know, without expectation. So,
yeah, that makes sense. So pretty much you're saying prior to her meeting Prince Harry, everything was pretty much fine between you, your dad, her, everyone was cool.
It always seemed fine. The only thing, like any normal family where you've got older siblings, and let's face it, we were not a silver spoon family. So everybody had to work. Everybody was going to school. She was, you know, working and waitressing until she got her jobs. When she was working on Suits, she was globetrotting a bit. Everyone's busy, and that doesn't make anybody less a family, because I guarantee for every celebrity out there, every politician, every realtor, anybody who is busy in a job that pulls your family apart globally, I don't know anyone who would say, we've been estranged for a couple of years because we're all busy, so therefore we're not family. I don't know them. Excuse my expression, but that's malarkey. Your family, no matter what, and if you're busy, and you're pulled in different directions. That is called life. And then not only that, so many people are out there going, well, you know, you guys weren't always there for her. Well, she was on Suits globetrotting. And let me tell you, I'm in an electric wheelchair. I think it was also incumbent upon her when everybody is busy and worlds apart to say, hey, babe, or hey, dad, I've got a weekend down. Why don't I come see you since I've got the resources and the access to, you know, flight tickets and whatever else. In other words, it's a mutual effort thing. And if you find that your family are busy or someone's in a wheelchair or whatever, well, then maybe you can make the effort to be more united as family. But still, you know, you assume that if you're talking on the phone and you're bridging the gap with technology, that's cool. You don't want to put pressure on each other. It's like, do your thing and we'll come together when we can. That's how we saw it.
You know, with like previous partners, is this something that would happen? So, you know, like you'll have those people in your family that when they've got a boyfriend or a girlfriend, you just never hear from them. They don't really want anything to do with you. And then the second they break up, they're back in your life. Or some people, they just carry on as normal. Is that something that would happen generally?
I think people get that way by virtue of being immersed in each other, you know, and they want to bond and they want to do their thing. And I got to say, there are a lot of people that think, you know what, while I'm getting to know this person, I want to keep my family out of it. But I think there might have been some element of, I'm going to keep my family away so that this person doesn't hear all my stories. You know, it's life. You come together when you can, you don't. And we weren't faulting her or putting any pressure on her. But I think certainly in this case, it seemed like keeping the family away because the Raglans were not integral or invited either. It wasn't just the Markles. It was everybody. So it's like, Daddy, I met a prince, but I don't want anybody meeting him or the royals because seemingly I told a lot of porcupines and I don't want anyone revealing it. You know, And we all know it's not my word against anybody else's. I mean, whether it's Megyn Kelly or anybody else, the porky pies, even that Piers Morgan talked about, it was lie after lie after lie. They were all pointed out. They were all debunked. So, you know, there were a lot more lies that seemingly family could have revealed that, you know, maybe she had told and didn't want anybody to know about. But a life of secrecy, what kind of life is that? When you have a family, you're honest, present in the moment, and you bring everyone together if you have a, you know, normal way of being human.
Definitely. How did you feel once you, like, you know, heard that she's dating a prince? Was it anything? I don't know what it means to, like, Americans, for example. For me personally, it is a big thing, but I personally wouldn't care. But how was it for you and the family finding out?
Well, I got to say, again, we were raised in Los Angeles where, you know, if you're at TV studios, you see Hollywood royalty all the time. Trevor, her husband, was like Hollywood royalty. He was like a Prince Charming in his own right. He was a producer. He was very successful. And the cool thing was they seemed to be growing together. Like, you don't have a lot. You might be Hollywood royalty, but in terms of life together, you don't have much in the beginning and you build those things together. That seems normal. That seems normal in Los Angeles. So when you're raised in an area where there's a lot of money, it's really not that impressive. It's really not that big a deal because it's abundant everywhere. And you become desensationalized to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think the one thing here was like everyone, you know, within the royal family, there was rumors of they're racist and they've got an issue with Meghan and they've got an issue with what color her children are going to come out and etc. Was that something that was like ever put across to you guys, or was this just like a publicity thing? Because I know now that they've kind of said there was never really an issue with
race. I think that was pretty horrible. I mean, you know, even in Southern California, you grew up in a life of privilege at the studios, nobody was racist. I was working as an extra doing under fives on a show called A Different World. So my point about that is, because I'm not a celebrity, my point about that is in Los Angeles, it's a very diverse community. So for most people, unless you live in a strained area, diversity is the norm and you don't think about skin color. So when we heard all of this about the royal family, I believed it was malarkey on the grounds that the royal wedding was incredible. I had heard that it was Charles who chose the archbishop or the reverend. And I heard that he picked out the choir. In other words, he rolled out the red carpet for a culturally diverse wedding that cost, I don't know, I don't remember the exact figure, but it was incredibly expensive. And he wanted everybody to feel included. It was a statement on the world stage of unity on a glorious scale. So for anyone then to suggest the royals were racist, I would argue no. They wouldn't have gone through all that. They would have had their own choir. They would have had their own archbishop instead of the reverend. And they demonstrated openness and love and fully embracing diversity. So when, you know, then when Harry did that and Meghan did that, I was pissed off. I thought, oh my God, this is so untrue. And so then to find out that they were backtracking and saying it happened, I thought, wow, you just played the whole world. You just manipulated the whole world into division. There's infighting. There's fighting everywhere on the internet. There's fighting and strain around the world. This manipulation really was damaging socially. And how dare they destroy society with all of this nastiness as some kind of personal game or joke, in my opinion. You don't manipulate people like that. It exploits people who do suffer from racism. It is abusive and a slap in the face of people who, regardless of color, embrace unity, because it undermines everything people like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. suffered and died for. And now it seems like it's somebody's game in the media for some kind of political and financial gain. And now to backtrack it. No, I just think it was the most horrible thing I could have imagined witnessing.
Yeah, it's crazy because I remember on it was Oprah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching that. I can't remember what year it was, but I remember watching it and hearing it. And everyone was, you know, thinking, who could it be in the family? What was said? What actually happened? And then for them to backtrack on it, it's true. It does look quite bad. And it makes you think, why would someone lie about that in the first place? Especially, once again, on a public platform. So this makes the royal family look bad. Makes everyone look bad. It looks messy. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and it not only pulls at the heart of the public, of everybody worldwide watching, but we had come so far as a world in terms of unity and overcome racism. And because of that damned interview that was all lies, then suddenly the world are on the edge of their seats again, feeling racial strain that wasn't even real, just to incite the hackles of the public for their own ratings, for their own quarter hour share ratings, and for money from advertisers. What a sick thing to do to the public. And I do believe that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would be disgusted at that whole, quote, shit show.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, there was a lot of people that was in her defense saying that she got racially abused and she went through, like, you know, that traumatic experience due to what comments were made, to then find out that it wasn't even like that is quite crazy. It's wild, you know. And the royal wedding and her getting married into that family, you're right, it could have been used as a platform to show the world of two worlds combining together. Do you know what I mean? So for those comments to be made, yeah, kind of.
And if racism was ever an issue for her, why didn't she go to a black sorority? Why didn't she ever date a black man? I mean, these are all valid questions. She went to a school that was culturally diverse, but in terms of socioeconomics and opportunities and social circles in Los Angeles, she dated wealthier white men. You know, she lived a life of privilege, and she could have run with that ball in any direction she wanted and been culturally inclusive in her own life by her own demonstration. And it wasn't until the Oprah interview that she publicly discusses, from what I've seen, publicly discusses racism. And I wanted to throw up when she looked at Oprah, a woman who truly has pushed against the glass ceiling as a woman and who truly has struggled with racism. I know Oprah knows what that's about. So when she looked at her and said, you know, I know what it's like to be raised as a child of color, I think Oprah for a minute was like, what did you just say? I mean, that was the what was more like, what did you just say? Because my sister is whiter than I am.
Yeah. I saw a picture that I think you quote tweeted or something, and it was like her hand brushing her face, but her hand was white and her face was like mixed. What actual complexion is she?
Like anyone, our complexions change when we're exposed to the sun. So she can get darker. She's in the sun. I've seen pictures where it seems like she used self-tanner because she looked a little orange. I get darker when I'm in the sun. I'm not really blonde. I'm a brunette, but I also have freckles. I think like most people, our skin tones change seasonally. But to play that, to seemingly play a race card, I feel is very wrong. You know, why not just be open and say, I'm biracial, I'm proud of who I am, white, black, you know, whatever, that we're all just people and let's come together as people. But I can't believe in my heart that she wouldn't understand that what she did in that interview was going to incite violence against so many around the world. It was going to cause social strain, and it was going to unravel so much progress that had been made worldwide with regards to racism and unity. You know, it was the most horrible thing, I think, to do that, especially now that we find out it had no basis in the truth.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when they're doing all of these things, like, you know, making the book, the documentary, going to do the Oprah interview, etc., who do you think is the reason this is happening? Like, is this a joint thing? Who do you reckon is actually pushing that between the two to say, let's go and make a documentary, let's go on the TV show and say this narrative, or go into an interview and say this narrative? Like, where do you think that comes from?
Well, I have different theories about that. At times I've thought that globalism is behind it, because you've got a large, especially with Oprah, you've got a lot of Democrat money from behind Sunshine Sachs and Oprah, that whole group of people in the DNC. So I thought maybe there was a political agenda to it. But then I also thought that when Megxit started and the two of them started indicating that they wanted to leave the royal family, they didn't want to leave or express discontent seemingly until they were busted in a lot of their lies, until they were scrutinized about lavish spending, until royal rules were being broken. Then did the word racism come out. So I don't understand what the goal or the agenda was, but I think it was entirely reckless and cruel. And I think in retrospect, we all have a lot to learn from it. A, not to believe everything you hear without doing your due diligence. And we have to tone down our sensationalism. Like, when someone says something outlandish, I think we need to be proactive rather than reactive. And we can't in society, we can't start engaging in racial mudslinging, because it's emotionally based. It's not intelligent. It's not research. It's just a reflex. And that's so dangerous.
Definitely. It is dangerous. I mean, marrying into the royal family, could you imagine Harry, you know, stepping away from his royal duties had he had not got married to Meghan?
I don't think he would have. And I say this on the grounds that he has stated publicly. He said, I didn't know how unhappy I was until she told me, which indicates coaching or some kind of brainwashing. And furthermore, I think the evidence is salient of photographs of him with his friends worldwide, partying, drinking with the royal family, all happy and laughing. I'm sorry, but according to the DSM and normal criteria for depression, in the eyes of most mental health professionals, he has not displayed over a lifespan depression that I've seen. He doesn't present outwardly, and some people don't, but the bottom line is I think there's more evidence to substantiate that he was happy in the royal family than there is to substantiate that he was not happy. So, you know, it compare and contrast. And I think he would have continued in the royal family, probably either met someone who was romantically a good fit or grown as a man in his royal duty. I think the probability is that his life would have taken a more positive turn than seemingly from this wedding.
Because do you think it was a good move then, like, for him to, you know, throw away his, well, like, mess up his family's relationship and all of this stuff for your sister leaving his royal duties and, you know, spewing all of this stuff out? What happens in the case of, God forbid, they break up and, you know, their marriage doesn't go to plan? I mean, it's going to be quite hard, you know, for everybody to get back to normal, for her to come back to you guys and act like nothing happened, for him to go back to the royal family and act like nothing happened. I mean, do you think that would be a good idea? I think I know the answer, but just in your opinion.
We're not talking about 5-year-olds or even 12-year-olds. We're talking about adults who made conscious decisions to not only accidentally, by their recklessness, but deliberately and coldly attack both sides of their families in order to put themselves at some political or financial advantage. And that being said, you know, when you treat people like that, especially with the world watching, people make mental notes of it. It's damaging to your reputation. People are not stupid. They see how you treat everybody and that you put profit ahead of people. Eventually, you know, the money is gone, whether you spend it or you get bored of it. But at the end of you realize, oh my God, I've destroyed everybody around me. The money's not doing any good. What do I have left? Those are choices you make. And when, in my mind, when you make a deal with the devil, someday you got to pay the piper.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy because, you know, when I think about it, you say that your relationship with her was good. Your relationship with your dad and her was good. His relationship with his side of the family was good from what we've seen. So it's like, was it really worth it? Is it worth it in the long run over a bit of money? And I don't know. I mean,
The relationships were as distant as they were because of everybody working jobs. And again, I'm going to throw this back in her court. When you have the resources and when you want to be a family member, or you sit around and going, oh, I don't have family. I always wanted a family. What did you do to make that any better? Did you hop on a plane to see dad? Did you hop on a plane to see your sister? Because none of us would have ever closed the door. We were always there. In fact, she called me from Buenos Aires. She called me from the green room of Deal or No Deal. We spoke when she was in Canada. She knew that there was an open line. And if somebody didn't want it, it was her. Because maybe she was having too much fun and maybe fame was more fun than your boring old family. That's a choice you make. And if those are your priorities, then you have to live with the consequences.
Would you ever like reconcile with her? Like say, you know, she said like she's sorry, for example, like not for example, for like she starts off by saying she's sorry for all the comments that she's made and even being disconnected and she's willing to take accountability for those stuff. Do you ever see you guys being you know, close or having a better relationship again?
I don't know, because we're not talking about a mistake. We're not talking about, oh, I said something nasty about you, or oh, I ignored the family. We're talking about someone with millions of dollars behind closed doors paying to do damage to family members and knowing that family members are suffering at times or challenged, whether it's disability or heart attacks or pandemics. But just to sit by and allow those people to be attacked through some of the hardest events in life when a phone call would make all of the difference, I think it's evil, and I think it definitely breaches trust. I don't know that anyone would ever feel safe with that again, because we're not talking about once, twice, three times. We're talking about a pattern of deliberate attacks and cold disregard over several years. So how could trust ever be gained or reestablished, rather? You know, I don't, I mean, it would seem stupid to trust somebody like that. If someone runs their truck into your living room, you build your house, they run the truck into the living room again, and this time they run you over, and they do it 5-10 times. Are you ever going to make it so that they can run that truck into your living room again? I doubt it.
No chance. Yeah. No, and I'm like you in that sense. Like, I really do believe, I hate making the same mistakes, especially as an adult. It's hard to forgive people for certain things. It just depends on what it is. But when it's deliberate stuff, and yeah, I don't like to be put in the same situation, because, I mean, in your case, it's like you've seen what she's capable of, what they're capable of, and what's being said. And all of those stuff, it would be quite silly to put you in the same situation.
No,
but everyone's different, so.
No, and I mean, there's a part of me that's definitely a pushover. Like, I was talking to a friend of mine, I said, oh my God, you know, there's a part of me that even in spite of everything, if I heard she was sad or, you know, they may be having problems, I sit here and I feel like, oh my God, maybe I'm the one person that can help her. I don't want her to feel sad. I don't want, you know, anything to happen to them or the kids. And I start getting soft, and then I have to kick myself and say, no, 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 this is not the bell curve for that kind of situation. This is not feel sorry for her. Maybe you can help. And maybe if someone is resistant and someone is not capable of empathy, remorse, or shame, you can't help that person. You, and being soft would be the biggest mistake that you can make.
100%. I mean, it would just have to be a case where she would have to really prove herself that, like, she is super sincerely sorry. Like, and even then, I don't know, obviously that's down to you, but I do agree, like, it's quite hard to forgive people from that standpoint. And I think that would only ever happen if they broke up. I would never see him and her being together and her going out of her way to reach out to you and him reaching out to them. Although I did hear that he is trying to sort that out with them, so I don't know.
Well, it's simple. I mean, you know, no matter what the personality or the case you're dealing with, a lot of damage and problems and family dysfunction, it takes years to do the damage. It would take years to unravel.
Facts.
So,
facts, 100%. Did you manage to watch the Netflix documentary? I watched the first episode, and I'll be honest to you, especially because I know a lot of it isn't true, I was just like, I don't know if I've even got the energy to put the hours into watching it. Did you manage to watch it all?
I watched enough of it. I don't think any of it was true. I think Spare was ridiculous. I think, in my opinion, both of them need to get seriously involved in counseling, because there's a disconnect from reality. And now to take a platform like Netflix and use it as $100 million PR attack on your family with stuff that's not even true, just to throw it up at the ceiling and see if it sticks, is disgusting, when they could have taken that $100 million and put some good into the world, put some truth into the world, mended bridges. You know, it, like, they would pay that kind of money to do more damage instead of doing good. Let's see what we can do to be all on the same page. Let's take time, apologize, and get united as a family and as a world. And let's put truth into the world to role model that's how you engage in conflict resolution. You make the world a better place, not a worse one.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't sell, though. That's the issue, ain't it? It doesn't sell.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at what people like Elon Musk are doing with their money. If you have that kind of money and you're not trying to make the world a better place by your own demographic, God, like, what a missed opportunity, and how sad is that?
Definitely, because I do believe in having a legacy. Not everything's about money. Family, friends, and even your reputation, I believe, is so important. Like, I don't think for money you should sell yourself out or play someone you're not, or I don't believe in any of that stuff. And obviously, a lot of people do it for opportunities, for money. Like, it's sad to see, but really the bigger picture is, when you look at someone like Elon Musk, you know, he's trying to do great for the world, so it's more honorable, you know, something that you can look back at 50 years, and exactly. It's, you know, he's obviously not perfect, but it looks good, you know, something you can tell his kids about and be proud.
Exactly. And when you're going for the quick buck and you're out there telling lies and throwing out this dramatic stuff just for the quick buck, that's a loss in the long run, not only of people and friends, but you're not going to be making money and people aren't going to trust doing business with you in the future. So it hurts your long-term profit margin if you're looking at things economically. Like, what about people like Courtney Cox? What about friends who they spilled secrets on, who are like, wow, who are now isolating them because they don't trust them? You know, you don't, whether it's the truth or not, if people can't trust being your friend and being with you without you spilling every bit of their life detail, especially celebrities who want a private life, they're not going to have a business relationship in the future. So they figuratively shot themselves in the foot by burning their bridges.
Mm. Your name is like credit. Literally, it's like having credit score, your reputation. If you've got a bad reputation, people aren't going to want to be associated with you, want to be with you, do business with you. Your name and your reputation is like everything, to be honest to you. Obviously, not in the short term. In the short term, it may pay. If I was to go and do a crazy stunt, it may pay today. But in the long run, it's just something that stays with you. You can't really wipe these stuff away, you know?
No, and all the money in the world is not going to hide what you see when you look in the mirror.
Nah, it's true. Did you get to read the book as well?
I did a little bit. I mean, honestly, I didn't read through it. I read enough and heard enough through excerpts to know that it was so disconnected from reality. I mean, the Todger story was ridiculous. The idea of my sister being anything like Diana or channeling her, the whole thing was just like fantasy. It was, I don't know. I don't know what the purpose of it was. It was meant to hurt people. It was meant to create a smokescreen from reality. And again, what a waste of literature. What a waste of time when that whole book could have been put to good social use. So by that, they didn't just miss an opportunity, in my opinion. They hurt the world. They hurt the world because of all the division. They hurt the world by role modeling that you lie about everything. And what kind of message is that for young people who are watching them? Like, it doesn't make the world a better place at all. I think it was just crazy.
Yeah, it's sad because, I mean, I saw about six different things that were proven to be false in the nonfiction book, which is just, like, crazy.
So maybe, you know, I don't know, I guess, but they're not 5 or 12. He's in his late 30s. He's 41. You know, horses don't change their spots. What does it take to spin them around to being better people and to waking up, not only for the effect it has on others around them, but for themselves, for their kids? This is not a recipe for success or happiness.
Yeah, because that was my next question. I was going to ask, do you think they are compatible, like they're good for each other, or do you think they're both kind of ruining each other as a whole?
Well, in my opinion, as long as they live their lives, you know, every day in a state of fantasy, ignoring the truth, yeah, they can keep going like that. But the minute they snap out of it and wake up or come down from whatever tea they're drinking, so to speak, they have to look at each other and there can be no trust there. If they're both lying to the world about everything and if each of them knows that the other is a liar, so to speak, how can they trust each other, their feelings with each other? How can their children trust them? What do they have? You know, how can you live in that kind of relationship? I don't know. I'd be afraid to go to sleep in that.
That is quite crazy when you think about it, right? It's like you both know you're both lying about things and you're both living in like, well, actually, maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't. You know, some people actually believe their lies past the point.
Well, I don't know. I think they know. I think they know that they're both lying and they both accept it, or they think there's something to gain from it. But that must make them subconsciously afraid of each other. I don't know. I wouldn't want to get up close and hug that.
No, neither, to be fair. When you put it like that, no, seriously, when you put it like that, it's actually crazy because, you know, I know what's going on. I've seen some stuff and et cetera, but obviously sitting down with you, someone that's actually, you know, got more of a connection to it past headlines and et cetera, and you hear about her relationship with your dad, your relationship with her, how it was growing up. Obviously, I've seen Prince Harry's stuff as well. It's quite unfortunate to see that they've both, you know, totally lost connection to their families, even for him to give up his royal duties and to kind of abandon his royal side of the family, for her to abandon her family. It's quite sad because I think if they do ever break up, it's going to be... I don't know about her. I think he's going to lose his head. I don't see it ending well for him, I'll be honest.
Well, and what... And check this out. I don't know if you caught this, but he's like, it seems like he's mirroring her. They're mirroring each other. It's codependency because, first of all, we've seen all of these photographs of Harry over his lifespan, having fun, sitting on Charles' shoulders, wrestling on the ground, playing ball, riding bicycles, hugging each other. And then Harry has the nerve to say that he never got to ride bicycles with his father or that there wasn't a lot of love, that he didn't get to hug him. Baloney. We've all seen so many pictures of that. What is he talking about? So he did the same thing then. Oh my God, I'm not getting my way with my family. So I'm going to start saying they were horrible and they never loved me and I didn't even get hugged. You know, it's like, it's just not true. What are you doing? I said this before. It's like the high school juvenile delinquent who catches the high school on fire and then demands that the principal apologize and plays victim. You know, it's like, and you get in trouble and you get busted, so you villainize those who are, you know, basically can't do this. Yeah, and to villainize Charles because he's not getting his way, in my opinion, that's what it looked like. That seems crazy because his whole life, it seemed like they had a close family. So now to lie about it, just to deflect or to rewrite history. Hey, for the people who didn't know history, let's rewrite it. You can't do it, and you don't learn from rewriting history. You have to look at history and compare and contrast the bad and the good so you don't make the same mistakes again. You can't rewrite world history either. You have to learn from what was bad and see what was bad, compare it to the progress and good, and keep doing good, right, so that you don't repeat it. The same thing is true with family. He can't rewrite his family history just because it suits the moment to get him out of trouble or to suit a political narrative. And, you know, just it's not working.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't think there's anything more to be said on his behalf or both of their behalf. They really just need to just go on, live their lives now. It probably won't happen. We may see another documentary in a few months or a year or something else. I don't know. Your sister may come out with a book. Yeah, they just need to let that go. And it's just crazy. And to be honest, as I say, it's quite sad to see them fall out with both sides of the family. Him not to really have a part of that side, your sister not to have a part of yours. Yeah. Yeah, no. I don't know. I don't see it ending well, to be honest. But
no, it doesn't matter how much money they have. They literally are like the juvenile delinquents who get in trouble and keep attacking the juvenile justice system and their parents and everybody around. Look, you didn't want to follow rules. You got sanctioned. You got in trouble. You can't keep attacking everybody around you. You have to get straight. You know, you have to do the right thing and be honest and change and move forward and apologize. But, it takes a long time when you're in your late 30s or 40s to change. So hopefully they will.
I saw that you wrote a book in 2021 as well, right?
I did. And everyone was like, oh my God, she's writing a nasty tell-all. Oh, she's terrible. She's a jealous hag. It's a nasty slamming tell-all. It was never a slamming tell-all. If anybody read the synopsis on the back of my book, it had more to do with the social labels that we apply to each other and how it intersected with our family, how far we've come compared to how far we have to go. And it dealt with disability, it dealt with skin color, it dealt with body weight and how we label each other based on body weight and what that's like and how that intersected with this royal wedding at this point in history. So you know, that being said, it was also nasty paid PR to silence my book, to silence me, to make everybody hate my book without even reading it. And, you know, Oprah didn't even read my book, clearly, because she wouldn't have said what she did. It wasn't a book of lies. So many sources have already verified that what I said in my book was true. So, you know, for people to label it, clearly that was a PR attack on me to silence me and discredit me. And that's cool. You know, the story got out, and writing another book that includes book one, but everything that transpired since. And the goal is, you know, to put something into the world that has social utility, that is not divisive, that is not an attack on anybody. You know, there's the difference between me and my sister and Harry. I'm a counselor. If I put a book into the world, my goal is that it helps people, that they can align themselves, that, you know, we grow as people by sharing each other's stories. They put out books intended to hurt people. That's not what you do as a responsible human being.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Is your book on Kindle as well? I've got a Kindle. That's how I read most of my books.
Somebody was peddling my book out the back door. So unless you find a used copy, if there are new copies out there, I'm going to say they're not legal. And I ended up getting burned by people plagiarizing my book. But if you find used copies, people do sell them after they read them. It's The Diary of Princess Pushy's Sister. And I use that title. Everyone said, oh, look at the title. She's calling her sister Princess Pushy. The Diary of Princess Pushy's Sister, because I'm her sister. A tabloid called her Princess Pushy. And isn't it interesting that at Slice of Life, that title points out social labels and how injurious they can be. So that was the reason I chose that title, as a play on words and social labels.
When's part two coming out? Have you got a rough date, year, month?
I'm hoping for June. So that being said, it's in the works. And again, my goal is, you know, so many people were wanting dirt. They were wanting a slamming tell-all. Well, that's not what I'm about. My book was never about that. And if you Google Samantha Markle, page 6, The Diary of Princess Pushy's Sister, in my very first interview about my book, I told everybody what the book was about, that it wasn't a slamming tell-all. Well, the media ignored that because that wasn't scandalous enough. I told them what my book was about. They still put out articles that said it's a slamming tell-all. And that was a lie. That was a media construct. That was fake news designed to injure me and you know, either to discredit me and or my book, rather. But so book number two will be more of the same, more elaborate, and hopefully put some good into this world.
So in June, we're looking for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Appreciate you coming on. Definitely going to try and get hold of the book. I love reading. I read a lot on my Kindle, as I said. So I saw it was on Amazon. I need to see if I can get it on my Kindle book. Yeah, looking forward to June as well. It was lovely to speak to you. Definitely 100% lovely to speak to you. Lovely to actually get this done, because, you know, we was going back and forth for a while. But it's better late than never. It was good to get an insight into the family as well. Just past headlines. Me, I know that the media can be very, you know, they can put certain headlines and title stuff. I like to go to the source, especially. I'm quite fortunate that I have my own independent platform that I can sit down and speak to people. I don't have to judge people by a headline. You know, I've heard all sorts of stuff about you, about Tommy, etc., and speaking to you guys and learning and just meeting people. You know, you get to meet people for who they really are. So
exactly.
And with this platform, obviously, I don't really edit it to a point where it's like, we sat down for an hour and I'm going to put 3 minutes. People are going to see this clean cut. So that's for them to make their own decisions. Do you know what I mean?
Cool. Well, it's been an honor. Thank you so much. My love to your family, to you and to Great Britain. I really thank you so much.
I definitely appreciate you coming on. Guys, if you enjoyed, make sure to subscribe, put on notifications. This will be on Spotify as well. And we're out. Peace.
Cheers.